This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, hootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Earlier this winter, City Limits and I had a chance to check out a Duquesne women's basketball game to shoot around with Megan McConnell. One of the, I think one of the best players in the country myself, who has a chance to play in the WNBA. And the coach of that team was very gracious to us, and that is Mr. Dan Burt. And he is on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, his team on its way to play Fordham in the A-10 tourney. Dan, how are you today?
I'm well. I really appreciate you having us on today.
Of course. Your team right now is having a pretty good year, by my account, Dan. And I think Megan is going to be probably the A-10 player of the year. Has that been decided yet? Does she have a good shot at that?
She has a very good shot at that. We'll know it, we'll know that answer here a little bit later this afternoon. She's going to be up for player of the year, defensive player of the year. She'll probably make the all-academic team, I would imagine, also. And then from a national perspective, she's a semifinalist for a Defensive Player of the Year award, the Becky Hammons Mid-Major Player of the Year award, and a slew of other awards. And all of those are well-deserved, and we're really excited about what Meg has meant to our program over the years. And this week is really going to be about us focusing in on winning an Atlantic 10 championship, but also celebrating what Meg has done for our program over the last 5 years.
Man, she's been unbelievable. And that day we came out there just to shoot around with her, I could tell that one of her main attributes is she's a cutthroat competitor. There's no doubt about that. I guess that's what those McConnells are, huh?
You took the words right out of my mouth. She's a McConnell. And that's the way they are. And you never bet against a McConnell. And we certainly didn't when we took Meg 5 years ago. And it's worked out fantastically. And really excited about what this week is going to be, but then also what Meg's future will be. We do believe that will include the WNBA and certainly a very lucrative contract overseas also when it gets to that type of year later next fall.
So a couple of questions arise with her career, and she's been remarkable, Dan. One is, who else was after her when you were recruiting her? And two, in this age of NIL and transfer portals and everything else, has it been a battle to keep her?
Very, very fortunate. Coming out of high school, I can still remember being in my driveway talking to her AAU coach, the Western PA Bruins, John Tate. And he was saying, Danny, you've got to talk to Meg McConnell. And I was like, she's really skinny. She's really thin. Her Aunt Susie's down the street at that other school. And I wasn't sure. And we had one phone call, and that's really all that it took. Meg was all in from the first phone call, and then we brought her in on a visit. And her father, Tim McConnell, the great high school coach, was sitting beside her. And I said, Meg, you're not going to find a better coach than the guy that's sitting beside you. Your dad is as good as it's going to get. And I just hope that your 4 or 5 years here at Duquesne will be exceptional. It'll be everything that your parents want it to be. And it certainly has been that. And we're going to hopefully cap that off with an A-10 championship this week. And we feel like we've had a pretty good year. We're a little bit behind where we thought we would be, but Meg has been an outstanding leader. When you consider that six of our 12 on our roster are true freshmen. And so she's led a group that really doesn't know what's around the corner every day to an 18-win season so far. And again, we've got a lot more basketball to play.
Have there been some sleepless nights about worrying if she would leave along the way, or was it always clear that she was going to stay?
In January of last year, January of 24, I brought her in and I said, I'm hearing some murmurs and I'd be a fool to not understand that you're graduating along with the other 6,000 points that we graduated last year. And, if you wanted to go and take the money and find something that was a little bit different for you, I completely understand. She had her brother TJ have success doing that. And so, I told her we were just very honest with one another, like we've always been. And she interrupted me and she said, "Coach, I've already talked to my parents about this. I'm not going anywhere." So that was a very profound statement, probably the most profound statement that I've ever had in 28 years of Division I basketball for a player to say that to me. And, she turned down multiple six-figure offers from A4 teams, and she was good to her word. And was there sleepless nights? No. But did I hold my breath until she was in the first day of class in August? Maybe just a little bit. You're talking about a lot of money, and you're talking about a young person who wants to have great success. And, I really appreciate everything Meg doing and believing in me and our staff, our university, our basketball program. And, no real sleepless nights, but a little bit of holding the breath until that day in August.
Dan, this is something that we talked about when we were down there for a game earlier this year, but there's only 36 players that get drafted in the WNBA per year. What stands out the most about Meg? What makes her so qualified to be a part of that elite group of 36?
Well, you're not going to find someone in Division I that anticipates better than Meg, and that's a really good question. I'm glad you asked me that. Her anticipation skills, whether it's going to rebound on either the offensive or the defensive glass, and then her ability to shoot passing lanes and get steals is as good as anyone in the country. When you look at rebounding at players that are 6 foot and under or 5'10 and under, she's one of the top five in both of those categories. And then from a steals perspective, she led Division I in steals per game this year, averaging 4 steals per game. And that was a consistent thing. She had 2 games where she had 9. But her anticipation skills, her ability to shoot the 3 off the catch with range, deep range, consistently has been very, very good. And then, you have that X factor. And so, WNBA teams pretty much know who their roster is going to be. They know, 10 of the 12 spots and sometimes 11 of the 12 spots. So they're really drafting for that one last spot unless they've got one of the first 10 picks. And they're looking for someone who's not going to cause an issue, who's going to know every play from every position, someone who can provide value when they get on the floor, but who's going to make the other players around her better, around them better. And Meg really fits that. I never compare her to TJ on the floor. The only time I compare her to her brother TJ is the opportunity to be drafted versus being a free agent and selecting the right club for her that maybe doesn't have the same amount of point guard depth. And then, their skill sets that are similar once they do step on the floor, because I think there's a lot of similarities there. But in terms of their games in college, I've never done that. But their professional careers, I think there's going to be a similar arc to one another.
Dan Burt, women's basketball coach at Duquesne University. They're on their way to play Fordham in the A-10 tournament. Dan, I have to ask you quickly if you were impressed at all with my free throw shooting the day I came over there. I was certainly better than the guy to my left here, wasn't I?
Let me tell you, Joe, you can play. There's no question. You've been down to Mellon Park back in the day. Everybody out there, Joe Starkey's a baller. That guy can ball. He got a little stiffer as we've gotten older, but you can tell that he's played a lot of basketball on the playground, whether it's Mellon Park or up at Kennard or somewhere in the suburbs. He's not just a good free throw shooter. He's got a nice quick release, and you know that he can shoot it.
You like
now,
that?
Austin,
yeah, but I wish that Dan would have seen us shoot at Pitt whenever Biba Cummings and I beat Joe and Jalen Lowe in a free throw shooting contest. I got my revenge.
Biba Cummings being the key to that sentence. But Dan was about to review your game. Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, boy.
You don't get paid to have silence, so I won't say anything about Austin.
Well, thanks, Coach.
Now, I'm reading on your bio, Dan, that you finished the 2017 Pittsburgh Marathon in just under 7 hours. Why would I've always wondered why anybody does that to themselves. So you had to train for that and then run it. Is there any enjoyment in that? And do you still run like that?
I ran cross country in high school and was a pretty good cross country runner in high school. And in 2017, when I decided to do the marathon, it was 1 week prior to the marathon, and I did it on no training. And I finished dead last. And they were actually tearing down the finish line when I crossed, and I was emotional. I was in tears that I finished. There's a lot of good stories from that 7 hours. I'll never do that again, ever.
That's amazing, though. That's actually inspirational that you were literally the last person to cross.
I was literally the last person, and I was almost 50 years old. And I told our athletic trainer here at the time that I was going to do that that weekend, and it was about 4 days away. And she said, "Dan, you could die." And you don't feel like that you have any health issues, but I remember crossing over in from Shadyside over a hill, and my son, my 5 year old at the time, Milan, held up this big sign that said "Suck it up, sissy," and
that's great.
That was for me, and I sucked it up, and I found a way to finish it. That catch-up bus that takes all the corrals, all the really slow people that want to quit, I refused to get on that, and somehow, some way, I crossed the finish line as they were tearing it down, and they took me into the the war room where everything happens, and they took my picture with the medal, and I still have that medal hanging up in my closet. Every day I tend to look at it and go, "Yeah, I did that. I did that, and I'll never do it again, ever."
That's cool.
My next thing is, I'm going to go try to surf here and learn how to surf and have some fun with that. I think as we get older, it's good that we always challenge ourselves with new things. So my next thing is going to be surfing.
Love it. In the meantime, I wanted to ask you about sort of the explosion in women's college sports, whether we're talking basketball, volleyball, the softball World Series. It seems like more people than ever are coming to games. More people than ever are watching when we get to the biggest games, for sure. And I guess in basketball, that brings us to Caitlin Clark, who I consider to be the female version of Steph Curry. It's just like, watching her game, you can't take your eyes off her. It's magical. What do you make of her and sort of the rise of women's basketball?
Well, I really believe it is the rise of women's sports. I think that we're seeing with Pitt volleyball and Louisville volleyball on the women's side and others that volleyball is a very viable program at the college level, and there's great interest there. Women's softball is the same way. Women's basketball has had its peak back in the early 2000s, and then we kind of leveled off, and Caitlin Clark is our Elvis, is what I say. She's like what NWA was back in the day. There'll never be another NWA. There'll never be another Elvis. They shocked the system, and she has certainly done that. She has shocked the system with her game. Her game is very similar to Steph Curry. There's no question about that, but I would venture to say that her passing ability on the women's side surpasses what Steph's passing ability is on the men's side. And so you're really dealing with someone who's truly a unicorn, and she's very relatable, and she knows how to keep herself out of trouble and stay very vanilla so that she's well-liked by a great wide swath of the community. And very frankly, she's exciting to watch and a lot of fun to watch. And we have a basketball camp in the summer that's eighth grade and under, and we have just about as many boys as we do girls. And you would be shocked at how many boys want to play like Caitlin Clark that are in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade. Last year we had the women's NCAA championship outdraw the men, and certainly some of that had to do with Caitlin Clark getting to the Final Four. This year is going to be very interesting because we have true parity. And on the women's side, we haven't had that for a long time. We've had the dominance of UConn and then South Carolina, and before both of them, Tennessee. This year, you really do have about 15 different teams that could win the national championship and probably around 22 to 25 that could end up in the Final Four. I'm a voter for the National Coaches Poll, and I believe I've had seven different number ones over the course of voting this year. And I can tell you that the top 10 or 12 slots have been filled by more than 25 people. So we really do believe that the NCAA tournament on the women's side this year is going to have great excitement. And we're going to see some upsets because a school like in our league, you know, we hope to win the automatic bid. That's the only way we're going to get in. But George Mason and Richmond should be able to get in as at-larges. And Richmond in particular has the ability to win a game and maybe two and surprise people because of the unique way that they play and the way the roster is constructed. Florida Gulf Coast is the same way, and South Dakota State is the same way. They're sort of the Gonzagas of women's basketball. And so we're really looking forward to an exciting women's tournament this year.
Wanted to ask about NIL. We see it so prevalent for especially the bigger major schools, whether it be the ACC, the SEC, the Big East. What is the challenge for you in the A-10 and just, I mean, for other programs that you talk to or you see in recruiting with NIL for different programs?
Well, you know, there are programs in the Atlantic 10 that have name, image, and likeness. We do not. We don't have a dollar. And I take a lot of pride in that. That's not that I don't want my players to be paid. Certainly, if they can get opportunities to make some money, I'm all for that. But we really lean into the educational component, and we really value the student-athlete, a true student-athlete. And so I charged my assistant coaches 3 years ago when we saw this coming down the road that we wanted to recruit as many high-quality, preferably A4 level type talent that wanted to major in the health sciences. And the reason why is at the A4 schools, they're not going to allow you to major in biomedical engineering, pharmacy, nursing, physician's assistant, PT, OT, things of those types of majors. And so we allow our players to do that. So we had a young lady last year, Ayanna Townsend, who is from the Hill District here and played at Winchester Thurston out of high school. And one of the reasons that we got her after she transferred was that we said that we would allow her to be an occupational therapy major and that I would pay for her to get her doctorate. And so Yanni, as we call her, is finishing her doctorate in the fall semester in occupational therapy. That would not happen at an A4 school in typical fashion. So at one point, I believe we had eight health science majors on our team. And so the other part of that is that when you're a health science major, once you start your sophomore year, it's very difficult to even transfer those credits to another university. So it almost becomes like a multi-year contract. And then also the number of schools at a high level that allow their players to major in those types of fields are very small. So we feel like we have a unique opportunity that we can offer here at Duquesne, and it's paid off. You know, we've got really wonderful student athletes that really value their education and are really good people and work in the community.
Great stuff. That's a great story that you were able to help somebody in that respect get her doctorate. That is awesome. Dan, good luck with everything. We appreciate you joining us. And go make a run in the A-10 tournament, if you would. Good luck.
Well, you know, the best three words in March are, see you tomorrow.
So I like that.
See you tomorrow. We're going to go burn the ships. And so what that means, Joe, is I'm going to go put on a Viking helmet. You'll be able to see it on social media. We're going to go down there, and we're going to burn the ships. And that simply means when the Vikings landed for war, they would burn their ships and go, and there was no alternative but to win. And so that's what we're going to go do when we're in Richmond, and we're excited to do that. Appreciate you supporting us and supporting women's basketball. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, Dan. We'll talk soon. That's Dan Burt, Duquesne women's basketball. He's great, man. That was fun. And he's still talking to Limits back there. I can tell. I think Limits felt insulted that Dan wouldn't say anything about his basketball game.
I didn't honestly feel insulted, but it's funny. I said, see you, Dan. Talk to you soon. He said, Austin, just so you know, I wasn't trying to insult you. I was like, no, I didn't think that at all.
He had a great review of my basketball game. You know what's funny about my basketball career, such as it was, which was nothing, is that, and I see this all over the place in every sport from peewees on up, and have seen it through my daughter's sports career from a young age, both from the positive and negative side, is that when a coach infuses you with confidence, which means lets you make mistakes on your way, that can lead to great results, just as the opposite can. And I realize coaches are sometimes not in the position where they can let everybody make mistakes and keep playing, depending on what level you're at. But when I was in high school, I was not allowed to shoot. Like, if I took one shot and it didn't go in, that was it, man. I was done. Taken out of the game. Things like that by Mr. Tischner.
Not that
I still resent him. So it took till after my career for me to realize my basketball potential. And it was really on pickup courts. Like Dan said, I could show up anywhere and play and shoot. And I'm a really, really good shooter.
Yeah,
that's,
you are.
That's indisputable. And when I was 25 or so, probably could have played on a Division III level and been somebody's shooter from the three-point line. Never real quick, but the moral of that story is that it can make all the difference to a kid, to an athlete, when their coach allows them to make mistakes along the way and infuses them with confidence instead of the opposite. Do you know what I mean?
The moral of the story is that you could have been Jack Golke of D3 basketball, potentially. But yes, I fully agree with that. Like, and I've had that with different coaches that I've had over the years, whether it be in grade school, high school, because we had a similar thing where we were not allowed to shoot threes in grade school basketball.
Right.
Like, when we were in 7th and 8th grade. I mean, you could if you were down by three with however much time left, but threes were like very frowned upon.
Now, there's another side to that story, because I've also been a coach, and it has to be from the player part. They have to earn your confidence. I get that. And the way they do that is by working hard. You know, we would have people who wouldn't play the sport in the off season and then show up and expect to be infused with confidence and play and be allowed to shoot. And my feeling was like, no, you don't make the shots in practice and you don't work in the off season. You haven't earned that. So there's always two sides to that story about how much leeway you give a player. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, it's all part of that influential aspect. You know, coaching truly does matter. We always wonder, like, how much does it and how much blame? We put so much blame on coaches when things go wrong. Shouldn't we give coaches more credit when things go right?
Here's the deal. Coaches and teachers have a profound effect on kids, positively or negatively. And I mean, we could, you know, if we open the phone lines for such stories, we'd be here for 24 hours talking to people about which coach, teacher had a huge effect on your life, positively or negatively. I still resent that guy. All these years later, I can still feel that resentment. Like, I felt there was favoritism because the one dude who played in front of me, his dad was a gym teacher there. And I felt it's real for me still all these years later. On the other hand, when I talk to teachers out there, and I am one of those too from time to time, I remember my 8th grade or maybe it was 9th English teacher, Mr. Elston. Why do I remember him? Because he was so enthusiastic about what he was teaching. So enthusiastic, loved it. And I feel like that's a struggle to find these people these days who are so wrapped up in the topic that they're teaching that it's contagious and has a lifelong effect on their students. That guy was into Shakespeare the way I'm into, you know, I don't know, the Golden State Warriors. Like, he was on fire every day with love for the topic, told me I was a good writer. And you don't know, with a little comment like that, how that can send a person on their way, because you're a teacher, you're a coach, and it works both ways, positive and negative.
I have a great story about a teacher. I don't know how great a story it is, but it's a very funny story. An English teacher that I had in 11th grade was my my AP English teacher. And then as we went into senior year, it was broken down. We had three different lunch periods. And you were separated, you know, with three different groups. And I only had like one friend in my one lunch period. And this teacher had an open lunch period during that time, wasn't teaching a class. So I would just sit in her classroom and eat lunch because I didn't want to just be in the main room. So I asked this teacher and was like, sure. They said that was fine. So I sit down and I start talking to the teacher. And the teacher, when I walk out of the room the first time, says, "All right, Mark, we'll see you tomorrow." And I said, I like turned around and I was like, okay, bye. And I did not correct the teacher, this teacher who had me in class the whole year before for a whole year in English. And I kept going back and going back for probably 2 months. And the teacher kept calling me Mark, and I never corrected them
from the show From the Middle.
Yes.
Nobody knew her name. She was in her class. That's very sad, Limits.
And I never corrected the teacher. Except I just like stopped showing up one day, and I was like, yeah, I guess I'll eat lunch in like the main lunchroom.
We may have to start calling you Mark from now on.
The teacher was like, "All right, Mark, how are you, Mark? Good to see you, Mark, in the hallway." I'm like, "I'm not Mark, but I just thought it was so funny." And I was like, "I'm just not going to correct them."
I love that.